President Trump's fight over the census is back at the Supreme Court. For Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Since the United States was first created, the census has every 10 years sought to count every single person living in this country. The Trump administration would like to change that this year. It wants to exclude from the count undocumented immigrants. There's a lot at stake here. Seats in the House of Representatives, billions of dollars in federal funding. Now the Supreme Court is preparing to weigh in. Marketplace's Nova Sappho joins me now. Nova, on Monday, the court will hear arguments in a fast-tracked case challenging the Trump administration's move. Who is bringing the challenge, and what is the crux of their argument?
So there are two groups here. One is state and local governments led by New York. The other is a group of nonprofits, including the American Civil Liberties Union. And they say the president simply does not have the authority to do what he did, which is order the Census Bureau to provide him two sets of numbers, one counting everyone and one with undocumented immigrants excluded from the count. Now, challengers say the Constitution and federal law requires counting every person in a state. The Trump administration argues it has the authority to exercise judgment as to who is an inhabitant of a state for the purposes of the count. Now, the Supreme Court is fast-tracking this because deadlines are coming up. The president is required to present the final census count to Congress just 10 days before he leaves office.
What are the consequences here if the Trump administration were to prevail?
Well, it's profound. Immigrant-heavy states such as California could lose seats in the House of Representatives. Also, a lot of federal funding is allocated to states based on their population count. The biggest, Medicaid, some $400 billion get distributed there. There's also SNAP or food stamps. That's more than $70 billion. There's highway construction funding, the Pell Grant program for low-income college students. The list goes on and on, Sabri.
All right, Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Some city planners see the COVID-19 pandemic as an opportunity to rethink urban living. It is changing, after all, how we live and get around. WBEZ's Natalie Moore in Chicago gives us a glimpse of some of those ideas.
Large neon green sidewalk pods stretch a couple of blocks in the Park Manor neighborhood on Chicago's South Side. This fall, people could sit outside, eat ribs, vegan dishes, or caramel cake from nearby Black-owned businesses. They could play oversized checkers and tic-tac-toe. Maurice Cox is Chicago's Planning and Development Commissioner. He says the pandemic has forced city residents to be less dependent on downtown for activities.
I feel really strongly that the scale of urbanism, the scale of the neighborhood, is going to be one of the major takeaways post-COVID.
Cox says, imagine if every neighborhood had its own downtown.
Where you could go to work, where you could go to get your weekly needs, where you could recreate, all within the geography of your neighborhood. I think neighborhoods have the potential to be the driver of the recovery and the driver of the urbanism that people want.
And what's happening here in the Park neighborhood is exciting to David Scully. He's an urban designer with Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, an architectural firm.
Urbanism and cities should, you know, really be. It's about collective energy and collective activity.
But that activity will need to be supported with meaningful investment. And historically, that hasn't happened in Chicago's Black and brown neighborhoods. That concerns Linda Lopez, a manager for a local transportation advocacy group. We stand in an empty lot. Lopez says with homeless people camped out nearby, this should be turned into affordable housing.
Every time I go into Little Village, I cross viaducts and they're pretty much tent cities.
She says this should be the focus of urbanism, making sure everyone is taken care of. In Chicago, I'm Natalie Moore from Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers real quick. The FTSE in London is down 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 2-4% range, with the Dow future up 70 points. A lot of people have been looking for comfort in one form or another during the pandemic, something familiar, reassuring, or something just to do. Maybe that is why toy sales have gone up. In particular, people are buying lots of classic toys like Barbie dolls and board games, including, as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports, one classic toy that can practically jump off the shelf at you.
If you grew up in the 60s, you might remember this song.
Who walks the stair without a care? And she's...
Or if you were a kid in the 70s.
A spring, a marvelous thing.
Or in the 80s.
It's Slinky, it's Slinky. For fun, it's a wonderful toy.
Slinky's been around for 75 years, and sales have been strong. There are more than 350 million of the metal, sometimes plastic toy out there. Analyst Chris Byrne says during the pandemic, people are buying lots of tactile and manipulative toys.
Especially for kids who are spending so much of the day in front of a flat screen, and it actually is a little bit physical.
And over the years, the toy has remained pretty affordable. The brand itself has also been sold a bunch of times. This year, Slinky was bought by Just Play Products when Alex Brands shuttered. Toy analyst Richard Gottlieb says for Just Play, that purchase made sense because Slinky is gender neutral, is sold everywhere, and has heavy brand nostalgia.
You're also buying a wonderful opportunity to use that brand to license it out to other companies to make additional Slinky products.
Like t-shirts, or a TV show, or just more Slinkies. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Alex Schroeder. Our engineers are Brian Allison and Jay Siebold. And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.